Welcome to Next Steps, a podcast from Black Hawk Church. We believe that following Jesus is a lifelong journey. So no matter where you're at, there's always a next step to take. Each week on this podcast, we'll create space for real conversations about the questions we wrestle with, the challenges we face, and the hope we find in Jesus. Our goal isn't to have it all perfectly figured out, but to walk faithfully towards Jesus together. We're so glad you're joining us. Let's dive in. Well, hey, everyone. Thanks for joining today's conversation. I'm your host for the series, Christian Eggers. And this week, we are jumping into a new series on the podcast that will accompany our Sunday message series called Can I Ask That? So on Sundays, we're going to be jumping into some of the big questions many people have about faith. And then on the podcast each week, we'll be diving deeper, responding to some other questions that we just don't have time to get into on a Sunday morning. So for today's conversation, I'm joined by Pastor Chris Dolson, and we're going to be asking questions about the Bible.
Woohoo!
Why is it so weird? Yeah. Is the central focus.
Thank you so much for asking me to be a part of this. This is great. Yeah.
If there's anyone I know that loves the Bible, including the weird stuff, it's you.
I love the Bible. That's for sure. I am a Bible geek, nerd, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to answer the questions very well, but I do love the Bible.
That's okay. This is going to be great. I think one of the things that I remember most that I think the phrase that's going to stick with me from your time at Black Hawk is read your Bible, read your Bible,
yeah,
read your Bible.
Read your Bible. Yeah, most people don't.
Yeah.
And you be Christ-followed for a long time and people fall out of the habit. But, I mean, honestly, the Bible is... it's a cross-cultural experience when you read the Bible. So people, they might like to go to Paris or something, but when you go into the Bible, you're crossing into a completely different culture. Mm-hmm. And it is weird, but it would be like walking around in Paris or something like that. And you go, that's weird. Like, why do they do that?
Like Paris 2,000 years ago or
yeah.
more.
Or yeah. So, you know, I think there's a kind of a snobbery that you have when you go to another culture. And you think, wow, they're wrong. They shouldn't do that, you know. So you have to kind of lose that when you go into the Bible, because that's what's happening when you read the Bible. It's you're going back a long time in time into a completely different place. It's not written to us, that's for sure. So you got to be okay and humble and go, whoa, wonder how they did things in the Hebrew world, you know, 800 years ago or whatever, that kind of thing. So
there yeah. You go. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot that I encounter in the Bible that makes me go, that's really weird. Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah. What does that mean? Oh my gosh. And you mean I have to learn something in order to understand it? You know? Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And not written to us.
Yeah. It feels like a different world in some ways.
It is a different world. Mm-hmm. Completely different. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Are you ready to dive in?
Yeah. Fire away. I'm not sure. Thanks for giving me some of the questions beforehand. But I'm not sure I trust you. You're just going to go off, I'm sure.
I probably will.
Yeah, probably ask great, weird questions.
I rarely stick to the script.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Okay.
Okay, well, let's start with this one. This one sounds really fun. Okay, so there's a lot of times in the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, where miraculous things happen that don't make sense.
Right.
So what's up with that? Do miracles still happen today? What... are these just stories? What's up with miracles?
So when someone asked me about miracles, so the probably the question that should come before what's up with miracles is like the whole thing of God. Mm. So is there a God? Because miracles are by definition something that is supernatural and generate wonder. Or awe, you know, the Latin word for miracle means wonder or awe. And so it's like, if there's not a God, then we shouldn't expect miracles. But if there is a God, well, you know, it's the whole thing. So the bigger question would be, the first question is there a God? So I don't know, we can talk about that if you'd like, but... at any rate, if there is a God, we should expect things that don't make sense to our natural world to happen. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Because God is outside of our, he's not natural.
Yeah.
He's above nature, supernatural.
Yeah.
So miracles are supernatural. So does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And that's a good place to start. So I remember, so I grew up in Madison, graduated from Memorial High School, just down the road from here. And I had a teacher, my freshman year of high school, who thought, I mean, he thought so highly of me. He was so great. The only flaw that he made sure that I knew that I had was that I believed in God. And that was nuts to him.
Oh.
And so he tried to persuade me of how impossible God was by bringing up miracles. Like that was his, the linchpin to him is if I can reject the idea of miracles, then I'll reject God.
Yes. That follows.
Yeah. Which didn't happen for me, but that was for him. He was like, these things, he was a scientist. And so he's like, these things are impossible.
Yeah.
Therefore God is impossible.
Yeah. So that's, if there is no God, there are no miracles. That totally is logical. It makes sense. Let me just say, first of all, for your friend who is an atheist and try to persuade you, I feel like we sometimes have we give atheists a bad rap, I really don't like it when Christians make fun of atheists or they say, well, if you had a brain or something, you believe, you know, this is really awful. because there are good reasons to be an atheist. Or my son, who's a philosopher, would say, don't say good, Dad, just say there are reasons. But, you know, so let's not do that with people that are wonderful people, loving people, and they have come to believe that there is no God. So they're in the minority, in historically and in every other way. But I think there are some really good reasons that God exists, and they're not slam dunk reasons. Like there's no sledgehammer argument for the existence of God, that if you pull out this argument, it smashes all resistance.
Like hard evidence or something. Yeah, it's not there.
Yeah, and we should be okay with that because we're not talking about a tree or a rock or something that occurs in nature. See, again, it gets this whole idea of natural. So if you're talking about a category that's outside of nature, so if I'm going to prove the existence of a rock or a tree or something, I just go point to it and stuff like that. It's kind of funny too, because the more you know about science, the more you know that, well, like there's light in this room. You can get a whole bunch of scientists together from UW or wherever. They can't even agree on what light is.
Mm.
And there's people that look at a rock and they can't even agree about exactly what's going on there. And those are things that we can actually see. So let alone something that you can't see. I don't know. I'm just talking on and on.
Yeah.
But I mean, so are there good reasons to believe in God? So I think there are. And then it should tilt the table in favor of theism rather than against it. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. So we, the atheists, don't have, it's more difficult for them actually. How do you actually prove something doesn't exist? That's
harder. I don't even know where I would start.
That's harder, actually. So are there good reasons to believe that God exists? And I would say that there are. So I can talk about that. I don't think this is away from miracles. Because if there is a God, then the next thing would be, it makes sense that he can do things which are supernatural.
Yeah. So let's say that the people listening to this podcast they've come to that place where they're like, all right, I believe in God. Well, actually, maybe this is a good spot to take a pause and say, if people have more questions about that, about the existence of God, do you have some resources that you would want to bump people to?
Yeah, there's a million.
Yeah. and we'll put details in the show notes too. So we can list a bunch of resources
there.
There's
a book by Tim Keller that was written a long time ago, like 2008 or something, called The Reason for God, Timothy Keller. Tim Keller, a pastor that passed away a few years ago, wonderful guy, pastored in Manhattan. So that's a great book. It's readable, it's very readable, and I think that would be a really good thing. There's another book on evangelical theology by Michael Byrd, and that's a great book too. That came out a while back too, but he's in Australia, theologian in Australia, and I would recommend. So I know everybody goes to podcasts and things like that, but everybody ought to own a book or two that would be helpful for them.
Yeah.
So Evangelical Theology by Michael Byrd, Reasons for God by Tim Keller. And then for their super nerds, in terms of the existence of God, anything by Richard Swinburne, who's an Oxford philosopher, or Alvin Plantinga, who's emeritus from Notre Dame, anything by those guys would be, but it's a different, you gotta be nerdy.
Yeah.
Go deep, you know, for those guys.
That's great. We got some of those people listening, I'm sure.
You know, and let me say something else too, because the Upper House has the Lumen Center. It's right here in Madison. And so like Tony Bolos, like the guy, man.
Brilliant.
He's brilliant, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's taught philosophy in schools and stuff. So I'm not Tony Bolos. He would totally be all over this kind of discussion. In terms of biblical theology, Garwood Anderson would be fantastic. History, Dan Hummel, then our own Charles Yu. And so if you have good questions and you want to, this is a city to live in.
These are people who love questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's say that the people listening, we're at the point where we're like, yep, okay.
We believe in God.
We believe in God.
Sure.
We believe that the miracles described in the Bible happened.
Yep.
But maybe we don't see miracles today. So do they still happen? How would you respond to that? Like, is that something that just happened in Bible times and it doesn't happen anymore? Or
good question.
Why don't we see miracles like
that? So I actually saw a miracle.
Okay.
So on November the 2nd in 2016 in Cleveland, the Cubs won the World Series. That's a miracle.
Chris, you told me you had a miracle story. That's not what I was expecting.
That is totally it right there, man. Cubs won the World Series.
There you
go.
Miraculous.
Let me just say right now, the Brewers are having a great season, and I'm happy for my Brewer friends. It's really remarkable.
You're still praying for a miracle, though?
Yeah, I'm praying for another miracle. I didn't think I'd ever see the Cubs win the World Series, but they actually did. So
I'm glad you got to see that.
Yeah, okay. So let me talk about the fact that the Cubs winning the World Series is something that's kind of unbelievable. It actually happens. So that would not be a miracle, I mean, in a theological definition. So theologically, a miracle would be something that, it's outside of the natural order of things. And philosophers and theologians have to be real careful when they talk about laws of nature and stuff like that. There's a guy named David Hume that wrote about this. So, it's just generally speaking, there's no natural explanation for it. So like the Cubs winning the World Series, there's a natural explanation.
Yeah, they worked hard.
Yeah, an owner spending a whole bunch of money to the right people at the payroll and stuff like that. So a miracle would be something that's not a natural explanation for it. It's above nature, supernatural. So based on that definition, then I would say that miracles don't happen as often maybe as you'd want. People use the word loosely. So like I just did that. Cubs win the World Series, it's a miracle. I passed a test, it's a miracle. So that's the problem we're having with the conversation about this, is that the word is used loosely. So if you stick to the idea that it's really about something that there is no natural explanation for it, then that's what the way I would define it. Then they don't happen that often. There's no natural explanation for the resurrection. That would be, you know.
An example.
Yeah, 100% of the people that die stay dead.
We've never seen anything else.
Right. Yeah. There's, there are people that maybe have medically died, but they are revived and things like that. But the whole idea that you start to rot, you go through that process and then you're resurrected. That's completely different. So, anyway, so I don't think they happen that often, but they do happen. And I think the other thing too would be they should be verifiable. That is, outside people who don't necessarily believe like you believe should look at that and go, there's no explanation for that. And so they produce wonder. It's like, what? So that kind of thing should happen. I think if you just get a bunch of Christians all saying that's miraculous, and if you don't believe that, then you see, what do other people say? See, that so it's an objective kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Then, and are there things like that that have happened? Yes. So that where there is no explanation, there's a guy named Craig Keener who wrote a 2-volume set on miracles, and he's got like one thing after another, and he brings in outside people, and it's like, you know, like there's no explanation for this kind of thing. So, yeah, I have seen that. There was a young woman who came to Blackhawk for a while, and there was no medical reason why she survived a very difficult situation that she was in. The doctors were like, there's no reason for this. I don't understand. I've never seen it. So those are the kind of things that you're kind of looking for. You to go, okay, wow. There's something happened there that no one can explain. And so that's what I would say is a miracle. That's
yeah. Okay. So related. Really no, that, I mean, I don't think we're not looking for perfect answers here. We're just
yeah,
wrestling with questions.
Me. Yeah, that's right. Wait for Charles.
Then yeah. We'll get a
perfect
yeah.
answer. Yeah,
he always ties everything in a perfect bow.
Yeah, let's get Chris on. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay. Okay. So related, you know, there's a lot of healing that happens.
Yes.
Especially we see Jesus's life and yep. and the disciples. There's yep. all these stories of healing throughout the New Testament.
Yep.
And I mean, speaking for myself, I pray with people yep. at almost every Sunday who are yep. asking for healing for something.
Yep.
Sometimes they see it, yep. sometimes they don't.
Yep.
So does God still heal today?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I do the same thing. And I also pray for medical teams and that you'd work well with your medical team and stuff like that, that would go well and you get, you know, that's kind of thing. Because when God heals through medicine, those are things that God has put together anyway. I mean, he's gifted brilliant people to figure out, you know, we used to have somebody at Blackhawk that they worked downtown and they were slicing DNA. Like, what is
it's
that?
So crazy.
What does that mean? Like, you know, like it's sliced salami or something. Like that, you know? Took me into this lab. I have no idea what I was looking at or anything like that. But I mean, God has gifted brilliant people to do brilliant things and medicine is wonderful and all that kind of thing. So, that wouldn't be a natural explanation for something. So supernatural would be, there's no explanation for that. No medicine that they took, no surgery, something different took place. And we don't have an explanation for it. So I pray for that with people all the time.
Yeah. And so you would say God heals through both natural and supernatural means.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say I've seen that.
Yeah.
Now I'm not going to grab a bunch of researchers and dig down deep, but anyway.
Yeah, that's good.
It's there is an issue of faith, and then I don't think we should poo-poo the notion of faith. Again, it all goes back to, is it more reasonable to believe that God exists rather than he doesn't exist? That, to me, is more important than the argument about miracles or anything like that. If God does exist, we should expect miracles.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because he does not behave within, quote, the laws of nature or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Outside of that.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the Bible, in addition to describing God, Yahweh, there's also sometimes these other creatures that are described,
yeah.
Supernatural beings like angels and demons. And there's even references to like other gods in some places. So what are these spiritual beings? What do they do? What's the deal with all these weird supernatural beings that are in the Bible? God's the only God.
What's the deal? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Obviously, again, you're going into a cross-cultural experience and you're reading about. So when we read the Bible, we're reading something also that pulls back the curtain on the invisible realm so that there is another realm. And this is, you can't read the Bible without what? Mm-hmm. What? I mean, just read Ezekiel 1 or something. You go, what is going on here?
Or Job. That's one of the ones that's like, what is happening?
What is happening here? So this is the invisible realm. We cannot see it. And so it's a very big part of the Bible. So there are all kinds of creatures that are created by God that serve him or don't serve him. And they are all over the Bible. So, yeah. So again, the prior questions are, there are only a few important questions that are compelling. And so why is there something rather than nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Is there a God? And if there is a God, is this how he's revealed himself? Like, is the Bible his revelation? So these are all prior questions.
Yeah.
So once you start answering, why is there something rather than nothing? Is there a God? Has he revealed himself? Is this his revelation? Then you get into the more kind of questions that we're talking about today. But they're prior questions before that.
Yeah.
So if you believe there's God exists and this is his revelation and we should trust it, which we do here at Black Hawk, then you go, oh, who are these beings? Who are they? You know, like that. So they're all over the place. So they're like, there are some beings that are like guardians kind of a thing. They just, all they do is worship him. There are beings that minister to us. You know, we call those angels. Angels are not just messengers, but they're like ministering beings, and they're everywhere, and we don't see them. So again, how do you know that? Well, again, I trust the Bible. There's things that the Bible teaches us about this realm that's bizarre. It's just bizarre.
Totally.
Yeah. So if you're not ready for bizarre, don't read the Bible.
Yeah.
If you want weird and bizarre, pick up a Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at any rate, yeah. Great. And then stay away from culture. I mean, like, angels don't have wings. So like, that's a big thing. And you know, you think of angels, you think of Hallmark little, or you think Cupid.
Or cherubs.
Yeah. Like kind of a thing. So there are different kinds of beings, but the whole idea that angels, people usually go, what? Isn't it to say, yeah, seraphim, cherubim have wings, but angels are different kind of beings. There's no verse to say they have wings.
Yeah.
So they're like just you and me. They, in fact, in like Genesis and stuff, you're not sure if you're actually with an angel or if that's a human being. Hebrews 13 refers to that also. So be kind to strangers. Why? Because sometimes you're hosting angels and you're not aware of it.
Yeah, I know, crazy. And then there's all these other times in the Bible where people meet angels and they're terrified.
Terrified, yeah.
That comes up over and over
again.
That's
usually the standard line when you see, like, Gabriel shows up. And they don't have names either. So there's only Michael and Gabriel, and that's it. Those are the only two named angels.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, related. So we talk about, and sometimes I hear people use these interchangeably. We talk about the devil. Satan and demons, plural. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's going on there?
So they're adversaries. So they are, this is hard, conversation is deep. So Satan is both a noun and a verb. It's like the word exit or something like that. It's both a noun and a verb. So in the, Satan is a Hebrew term, Satan. So actually when you say Satan, you're actually speaking Hebrew, you just don't know it. And many times it's referring to the adversary. It's better to think of it as the adversary rather than like his name. The New Testament uses the term diabolos or devil. That word never occurs in the Old Testament. It's a New Testament term. And so there is the leader of the adversarial group and the Satan. And he is the devil. And so I can't remember what your question was now, but we just have to be.
So like
he's a real being. He's got followers. He's against God. He hates God. He hates Jesus. He hates the cross. He hates the gospel. He hates us. All that kind of stuff.
But that's one character. And then there's like beings below.
Yeah. There's like a hierarchy that we see in the Bible. And he's maybe I don't know, I wouldn't say benevolent dictator, but I mean, you know, he's the leader of the adversarial group and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's he's a mysterious figure. I could talk more about him.
Yeah.
The devil talk.
Yeah. Okay. And so then one more related follow-up question. So
to the devil for a second.
Go ahead.
So this is another one of those places where I think Christians are naive. It's like when we make fun of atheists or something like that, we shouldn't do that. And we shouldn't make fun of the devil or Satan. I think that's, you're falling into a trap if you do that. He's brilliant, and we're no match for him.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And so we need supernatural help in order to, he's very powerful. So let's respect. We're not worshiping him. I'm just saying, be careful.
Understand that he's real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good. Okay. So then, getting back to Job, it talks about, so in the Bible, it's very clear. The Jewish faith, Christian faith, is monotheistic. They believe in one God. And that's really unique in the time of the Old Testament, in the location where they were. And so, but then books like Job reference other gods.
Right.
So what's going on Psalms. There? Is there one God or is there multiple gods?
Yeah, the Psalms do too. So this is, again, you're traveling to a different culture in the way they refer to things and things like that. So, for example, in Psalm 82, it says, God presides in the great assembly. He renders judgment among the gods. So this would be Elohim in Hebrew.
And that's plural.
Mm-hmm. And then you read further down in verse 5, the gods, the Elohim, know nothing. They understand nothing. They walk about in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. I said, you are the Elohim, gods. You are all sons of the Most High, but you will die like mere mortals, and you will fall like every other ruler. So that's a great passage in the Bible that does say that there are other gods. So what this means is that there, theologically, just to cut to the chase, there is only one ultimate God, God of gods, that's Yahweh, only one Yahweh. But then there are other beings who are called Elohim in the Bible. And there are a lot of places all over the Bible. So when people say, is there only one God? You want to say yes right away to that, but you're not being true biblically when you make that statement. Because again, it's an understanding of what Elohim means and all that. They were called gods. And again, that's traveling to a different culture, a different land in Wisconsin, Protestant, Catholic America. We just think that there's one God. Biblically, they're all gods. There's a bunch of gods. But there's only one great God who's God of gods, King of kings.
That's Yahweh.
Lord of lords. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's Yahweh. Or Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. A little bit of a different question.
Oh, can I get back? Michael Heiser, yeah. We should advertise.
Sure.
Heiser's book. Heiser's a graduate of UW, passed away a few years ago, friends with Charles. And his anything that he does, and he's got a podcast that was out, any of his works, he delves into this quite a bit. And I would recommend that. And then our friend Tim Mackey in the Bible Project, they have podcasts on these kind of things, and that would be helpful for folks too.
And we've done a series at Blackhawk on the Unseen Realm.
Unseen Realm.
That would be another good one to go to.
Yeah, we did that several years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so moving on to a different part. This is something that I feel like we get questions about in different ways pretty regularly. So there are some weird laws and punishments for laws in Leviticus. So let's start there. So we can just acknowledge there are some weird laws in there that don't make sense to us in 21st century America.
That's the way to say it.
And then it seems like the punishment for breaking some of these laws is so extreme, getting stoned, getting banished, getting like the cost for transgressing some of these laws seems real steep. So what's up with the laws in Leviticus? Why are they so crazy and extreme?
Well, again, when you say crazy and extreme, so that's like you're walking around in Paris and you're going, this food tastes terrible. You know, you're offering it, you're being judgmental and you're offering a judgment. It's a kind of cultural snobbery, basically. So if you went back in those days and you saw the way other Assyria and Babylon and other places ran their governments and stuff like that, these laws are not that extreme, actually. And God is actually trying to build a people that are completely different from the rest of the world, like a holy people. So they get our attention, yes, for sure. They're not as extreme as other laws in that world. And he's trying to build a group of people that were completely different than everybody else. It's in the crossroads of the way the world worked back in those days. If you just look at the eastern side the eastern side of the Mediterranean, and then there's a big desert on the far east of that, and that's a little corridor that if you were going to Africa, if you're going to Europe, Asia, you went through this little corridor, and he's trying to have a people group that looks so different from the rest of the world. And these laws are intended to cause people to go, you're different from everybody else. And I'm interested in who your God is, and I want to worship your God. That's the idea behind it.
Yeah, that's great.
So they're not for us. That's the other thing, is that if they're repeated in the New Testament, or if Jesus mentions them or something like that, we should go by the principles behind some of these laws, but we can't actually obey a lot of them today because we live in a completely different culture. Here's a classic example of like the principle behind this. It's kind of like, that's what we should go for. So here's Deuteronomy 24, 14 and 15. Do not take advantage of a hired worker who is poor and needy, whether that worker is a fellow Israelite or a foreigner residing in one of your towns. Yeah, awesome. Okay, great. This is about justice. It's about poverty. It's about generosity. Yeah. So the next verse, pay them their wages each day before sunset.
Oh, okay. We don't do that.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Blackhawk doesn't do that. What are we doing, Blackhawk?
Yeah, right. So it's like, okay. That's a classic illustration in the Old Testament where you find in the gleaning laws too about fields and stuff like that, Deuteronomy. I mean, so let's go with the principle. If the principle is repeated in the New Testament, so God is for the poor, God is for the stranger, God is for justice. That's just all over the Bible. So how do you actually apply that today? So if you go to verses in the Old Testament and say, well, we don't have fields that people, make sure people can glean from here. We don't have that today. So again, you're going back to a different culture. So if it's repeated in the New Testament, if it helps us, if Jesus talks about it and stuff like that, yep, for us today. So the whole covenant, though, we don't live by that covenant anymore. We live by a new covenant. And the old covenant was supposed to change our hearts anyway. It didn't for the people that followed it, but we are supposed to have completely different hearts today following being members of the new covenant. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I would say to people today. And then they can always ask their friendly AI bot, what would Tim Keller say about X verse or whatever? And so that's going to give you an answer too.
Or even, so I'm in seminary, so I've taken Old Testament and Old Testament exegesis and things like that. And so this question came up in class, like, wow, these laws seem so extreme. And our professor had us actually read some of the laws of the Assyrians and of the Babylonians as like a comparative. And it was really eye-opening.
Yeah, isn't it great?
So that's something I could recommend too, is like, just, again, I'm from the Google generation. You can go ahead and just Google it.
Absolutely.
And you'll see that actually it's not. Yeah, there are some ways in which these laws value people more than many of the laws of the surrounding nations.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm not sure if you wanted to do this or not, but I mean, yeah, because we live in a world now. I mean, take advantage of some of these tools that we have. The access we have to biblical and theological education today is mind-boggling. So you can just say, you know, what does Michael Heiser say about angelic beings in the Old Testament? And boom, you know, you're going to get, and then you go, oh, that's too long, summarize it.
you know?
And so we take advantage of the opportunities that we have today for these kind of things.
Yeah, and I know sometimes it can be hard to know which sources are trustworthy. And
that's
so what,
why we exist.
Yes, that's
we're your church.
Your friendly neighborhood pastors.
There you go. Come to your favorite neighborhood pastor. So how many people on our staff have theological degrees? And I like to say, you know, and Lynn said not too long ago, you know, all the different schools that we represent on our faculty or on our staff here, it's amazing. I don't know, like 15 schools or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something wild.
So we're not all coming out of like one little thing.
And we've got a team of people. The spiritual formation team works with the teaching team, and we put together resource lists. So the resource page at Blackhawk is incredible.
And we want people to ask questions.
Yes, we love questions.
Questions are a function of growth.
Yeah.
It's like the very best thing. So I guess we could just say to anybody who's listening, if anybody from Blackhawk says, don't ask questions, I mean, let us know that, because that's wrong.
Yeah, that's not how we feel.
My life is all about asking hard questions, you know, poking the Christian in the chest and going, what in the world's going on here? And just do that, because that's what it's all about, growing and learning and being humble, not arrogant, seeking truth.
Yeah. That's great. All right. Last question. Uh-oh. I didn't give you this one ahead of time.
Okay.
What's one of the weirdest things that you can think of in the Bible? Oh. One of the things that you still look at and you're like, this is just weird.
This, I don't know. I guess maybe this is not the kind of answer you're looking for, but I don't get God, actually. God is... So, you know, I know something about the stars and the galaxies and stuff like that. I can't put my mind around his awesomeness. I just can't. It blows my mind. It's hard to believe. You know, I mean, you know, but things that we can actually see and study are hard to believe. And I just kind of went extreme with like distance and size and stuff like that with galaxies. But I mean, you know, like... go microscopic and stuff like that. And how, you know, how these atoms and nucleus, you know, I don't understand any of this stuff. So it's mind boggling. Even things in nature are mind boggling. So you're talking about someone who's outside of nature and created all those things. I just think it's like, what?
Yeah.
And then incarnation, little teenage Hebrew girl becomes pregnant. I mean, like, what? What? And there's every page in the Bible to me is filled with awe and wonder. It's like, what? So I can't think of a specific thing. It's all like.
The whole thing's weird.
It's just, it's just like, what? So it's a different world.
Totally. Yeah. The fact that the creator of everything would want to know us and be embodied is just crazy.
Yeah. It came. And the whole thing is designed so that we might be able to experience him forever.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, what? So that's just like, okay, well. And so just get our minds around forever and the whole idea of, you know, Cubs winning the World Series every day or something like that. You know, it's the joy that we will have with him forever. And he came because we all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each one of us has gone to his own way. And God sent the shepherd to take our iniquities upon himself so that we might be able to be in his fold forever. I mean, like.
Whatever. Because he loves us.
Because he loves us. Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a really good note to end on.
Okay.
I know we could keep doing this forever.
Forever, yeah.
Asking questions, but this has been so fun. So thanks for joining us.
Hey, you're in charge of things around here. Bring in the Bible nerd more often. I'm happy to talk to people.
I love it. This is so great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Next Steps. Don't forget to check out the show notes for a conversation guide if you'd like to keep the conversation going. If you want to learn more about how to get connected at Blackhawk or simply find resources to help you grow, check out blackhawk.church/hub. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend and subscribe so you won't miss future episodes. Until next time, let's keep following Jesus together.